Video followed by See You at the Show, which is coming up next. Stay with us after that for Surferbilly Freakout at 6. We'll have some freeform music at 7. Roots Rock Reggae will be on at 8. And then Get In Your Jammies with Brian Teague at 10. And I did want to just briefly let you know that the 11th annual CU Folk and Roots Festival will be taking place Thursday through Saturday, October 24th through 26th, at various venues in Urbana. There'll be more than 60 events, including performances, jam sessions, dances, workshops, family-friendly events, and more. CU Folk and Roots is a volunteer-run, not-for-profit event that strives to promote and celebrate the CU community and its thriving music scene. Festival wristbands are available online and at the Rose Bowl. For more information, please visit www.folkandroots.org and or follow the festival on Facebook and Instagram. And with that, we'll get to this week's edition of See You at the Show. As I mentioned a little bit earlier, your host, Eric, is not able to get into the studio tonight, so we are going to be listening to a show that he pre-recorded and sent along for your listening pleasure. So we'll get to that right now. Thanks again for listening to WEFT Champaign.
This is Eric Schacht with See You at the Show. I am on location at the Soto Theater, where I got to preview the Twin City Theater Company's production of No Exit. I'm here with the director, Aaron Polk, who also stars as Vincent Credeau. And how you doing, Aaron?
I'm doing great.
Great. And I'm
terrified, but...
Terrified? Okay. Well, you should be terrified about the show. You shouldn't be terrified about this radio interview. And so I didn't know. At first, I thought you were terrified because of all the viewers and all the pressure of being on See You at the Show. But yeah, I think for opening night would be a little bit more terrifying.
Oh, opening night's a little terrifying.
All right.
This has been a journey.
Okay. Well, we have the whole cast here. We also have Dylan Heck, Antonella Ortiz, and Gabrielle Smith. Welcome, everybody, to the show. And thank you for, in this time of like great stress and everything, taking time for your kind of media tour. Of
Can
sitting down.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is quite nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know that with all the chaos,
we were actually planning last Friday to have we were going to slam lines. We were going to do a line.
You're really going to bring this up on the radio.
I was going to say is that we were having so much fun that we forwent the line pound because we needed to not be working. We needed to not have these scripts in our hand, and so it was.
I've never even heard of a line pound. Is that
a line pound? It's a old director that I used to work with. That's what he called it. When you sit down, you take the script 2 pages at a time. And yeah. You do them over and over and over again until you get every line right.
We probably picked up the book once.
Yeah. Ooh, that's miserable.
It is miserable, but we needed it.
Yeah.
At that point, I was only in the role of Credeau since Tuesday, right?
Yeah. Yes.
So I'd only had 3 rehearsals with them at that point. And they were, that basically set them back. And so they were, we needed to work on the line.
All right, so let's get this out of the way, Aaron, so we don't have to spend the whole show on it.
Uh-huh.
You're directing the show.
I'm directing the show.
You didn't cast yourself in the show.
I did not cast myself in the show.
And then a week ago, things changed.
It was a week ago, yeah, early last week, we had a vacancy in the show, and with only 9 days before we opened, we were not really sure how we could proceed, and lots of discussion and hemming and hawing, and then the board asked me if I would take the role, and the cast seemed to think that was also a good idea, and we decided to... We just sallied forth.
And there was no indication, like you didn't ever consider yourself to be an understudy or in any way preparing along the journey.
Never.
So how long have you been in rehearsals altogether?
It
was early September.
Thursday will be, I keep track of all this on Facebook. Thursday will be rehearsal 20.
Oh.
So we did the show and they did the show in 20 rehearsals.
Okay. And so Antonella, you are Estelle.
Yes.
And before we get into that and talk about your role, this is the very first time you've been cast in a show.
It is. I went into the audition, and I was very forthcoming with the fact that it was my first show, mostly because I wanted them to judge me not too harshly on my auditioning skills. I thought it went well, but then I was like, oh, you know, if somebody else comes in and they have more experience, they're probably going to cast them. And then Aaron called me a couple days later.
It was the next day.
No, the next day.
I called the next day.
And he was like, oh, you want to just sell? I'm like, why, yes. Yes, I would.
What made you decide to get into acting in the first place?
It's something that I've been wanting to try forever. So I grew up in Honduras, and at the time that I was there at my school, there was no like drama club, theater club, anything like that. I tried, like a friend of mine and a couple other people, we tried to start one. There wasn't enough like momentum to keep it going. So that kind of dropped. And then I moved to the US, and the people that went into theater, like were very established in it, so I thought I had missed my boat. And so now that I was here, I was like, you know what? You know, I'm going to go audition. Worst they can say is no, you don't have the experience. And then that's that.
Her lack of experience scared me at first. That we, there was a lot of thought about, okay, this show is really heavy. This show is very difficult. Mm-hmm. And then she's a natural.
Yeah. Well, you took a chance, yeah. but she is a natural. And, yeah. And I think it had to have been intimidating to see how much you were on stage and how extensive your dialogue was. Because this isn't like breaking in gently into theater.
It was a show that I was familiar with, and that was part of what drew me to it. I'd read before. I now know that I don't know when I read it, because I don't remember when exactly it was. But I remember being familiar with it and like the general concept, and so I was very interested in it. I dance, and I am very comfortable and happy when I'm on a stage. So I was happy to find any excuse to stay a whole hour and a half on stage.
So are musicals next for you, maybe, if as dance and acting, the logical thing would be musicals?
No, I can get a singing
voice down.
She's
going to work with me forever.
So Gabrielle, you are, I assume, have a little bit more experience in that acting.
Yeah.
So far.
I've only been in 3 community shows. This
okay.
is my 3rd one. So yes, I do have experience, but like I wouldn't call myself an actor per se.
Have you acted in Champagne before?
Yes, I have done 2 Park One shows.
What shows were those?
I did Servo 2 Masters last fall with Michael Bryan, and I did Young Frankenstein with Chelsea Colley.
Great. So, what role did you have in that? I loved that show.
Young Frankenstein?
Yeah.
Oh, I was just in the ensemble, but it was such a great experience.
I bought my smoothie from
Brayden
today.
Yeah.
But so anyway, I love the Young Frankenstein.
Oh, yeah,
and I'm sorry I don't remember you in it.
Cool.
There was a lot of dancing. Did you have a dancing
yeah,
role in that
well,
also?
I was like the dancer, but yeah, we did dance. It was such a fun show because it's just so crazy and what's his face? I wrote it. Mel Brooks. Brooks is crazy.
Well, this is about as opposite.
Did you just call Mel Brooks what's his face?
I was like, Blazing Saddles, the one. I see him. He's there. Mel Brooks.
I think he'd get a kick out of it. You know, we stream worldwide. I'm sure he'll be taking it in tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
If he shoots me a message,
morning,
I'll let you know.
Every morning, Mel Brooks just gets up and he's like, you know,
what's going on over
at West? Yeah, what's going on in
the world? I have content about every day. We can keep him entertained. Well, anyway, I loved you as Inez. It seemed like you had a whole lot of fun with it.
Oh, yeah.
And so Gabrielle said she was familiar with the show coming in. Were you familiar with No Exit?
Absolutely not. No, absolutely not. I knew of Jean-Paul Sartre. I've taken a philosophy class before, so I knew of his philosophy coming into this. But I had no idea what this play was going to entail at all.
So why did you, how did you even hear about this happening?
Well, I follow the Twin City Facebook page, and so I saw that they had some auditions coming up. I think they had another one going on at the same time. And I read this, and immediately, as soon as I read it, I was like, that's going to be good.
She had written on her audition form that she was looking for roles with more depth. I mean, that's pretty much verbatim what she had written. She was looking for roles with more depth.
Yeah.
And I, well.
Well, I think from Young Frankenstein to from Mel Brooks to Jean-Paul Sartre, I think we've kind of go on the depth-o-meter pretty far. And so were you educated at Yale? Is that right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm a Yale graduate, born and raised.
I don't know why that's so bizarre to me. I don't think I've ever met anybody from
She's
Yale.
Not actually.
I'm not. I'm just kidding.
It's something that she has on her face.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
The Zimbabwe thing isn't even true?
No.
I had a whole page on Zimbabwe and how like so few actors in Champagne come from Zimbabwe and how I thought that you brought the Zimbabwean kind of
and
like
you are
swag.
Correct. Very few actors come from Zimbabwe.
That's it. We're done. All right, so let's turn to Dylan then. I'm done with you. So Dylan, not many people come from St. Joe High School to the stage of the mighty Twin City Theater Company.
Yeah.
What is your journey in theater?
So I actually did not start doing anything with theater until I was like a freshman in college. And I first started with Marisol, directed by Jace Jameson at the Station Theater last fall. And first of all, that show was amazing. It was a very fun experience. The cast was awesome. The director was awesome. It was a very good first experience. And the reason I got into it was because one of my best friends from since I've been like 8, he moved to Pennsylvania a long time ago, and I haven't seen him in ages. And he called me on his way to basic training for the Navy, and he was just like, "Hey, I think you should try acting." And he had this whole spiel and long speech about it, and it was very nice to hear that he was, you know, thinking about me in his last few moments of citizenship.
He's still alive, though, right?
No, yeah, he's
I thought that's where we were going.
No.
If it were literally his last words to you, then yes.
No, it's gotten to the point, though, that it has gotten to the point where he's busy so much that I don't hear from him almost at all. And it's
will you check tonight, though, and make sure?
Yes.
Because even though the story would be so much better, go forth. You must act.
Next time I tell this
story, send
him
this show.
next time I talk to him, I'll change the story a little bit.
Well, I know that a lot of our servicemen around the world stream See You at the Show, so I'm sure he'll be taking it in tomorrow.
I was actually in the Army for a little while. And,
he's got a military background.
I was in the Army for a little while, and I got medically discharged, and that's why I got back, because I was in a super, I was really depressed when I got back, because I was just, I felt like I lost out on what I was kind of meant for, and because I planned out my future and stuff, and when he called me and told me that, I felt like he was doing it because I was on his mind the entire time that I was going through that, and you know, I got broken up at the same time I got home. It was just a really bad, mental state I was in for months. And when he told me that, I was like, you know what? I might as well. I'll give it a shot. And so my second audition was for Jace Jameson. And my first audition, he was actually at that. He was there learning, or not really learning, but understudying how to really run an audition without assistance.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me that I would have gotten that part in the first play had he not been like, no, I want his first experience to be Maris.
So Dylan, I think your character, who's unnamed, I guess in this version, is the boy. You're saying he's the valet in the original one. So you're probably kind of the forgotten character and the fourth character,
I'll be honest, I feel like I am. I really do. But I still enjoy the kind of curiosity that he brings because you were talking right after we finished, you were talking about how you wanted to see more of the boy, and I do too. Don't get me wrong, I do too, but at the same time I feel like that's kind of part of who he is in this, that he shows up, he does what he does, he gets out,
leaves
and
them
that's
wanting
it. And
more.
And that's just I feel like that's the kicker, I guess, with him.
One of the things that he does back when I was directing the show and not in it, and I could actually pay attention to the things that he was doing on stage, was when they were blocking the sequence, I noticed that he was looking at his watch a lot, which sort of added this sort of element to the character of, okay, I've got a schedule, and you are keeping me from my schedule.
At first, it was actually by accident. I had a date that night. I won't lie. At first, I was hoping to kind of get through my part and so I could get out of there. And when we finished my part, our acting coach. And Aaron himself, they were both like, "That was awesome. I want you to keep doing it."
The watch checking was really funny, and it added an element to it that I think, you know, a role like this is somewhat thankless, and so he added those little bits to it.
Yeah, I noticed one look, and I thought it was super subtle, so I wasn't even, and so you're not overplaying anything.
No.
I don't think he overplays anything when he could in so little stage time. I think you want to get noticed, but I did write down the word curious, and I wrote down the word almost amused. Mm-hmm. So I think that he was a little bit more of an interesting guy to come through than probably you normally get.
Yeah, you're talking about those subtle looks and everything. You didn't think you really noticed it. I actually make it a point to do that a lot. I make I might be critical, I guess, but at the same time amused, like you said.
I think he adds a good element in the beginning of the show as a contrast to the end of the show, and kind of gives us this unique vibe of confusion and this weird curiosity, because the audience doesn't know what's going on. Cordoza doesn't know what's going on, and you're the only one who does.
It sort of makes you think at first that the show is a comedy.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's,
I love that tone.
Yeah, it's not.
Right. Well, I mean, and the point where he talks, I guess when he leads into to saying that he has an uncle there, but when he talks about, well, there's halls, rooms, halls, and you just kind of then envision this labyrinth outside I really did get a good visual of just this, it just like the scale of it just shot through my mind, like, of then three people in millions of rooms everywhere.
If you've seen it, like in the Matrix, for instance, like in the white halls, it's just endless numbers of doors.
Exactly.
That's exactly what I pictured.
You did that. You made it happen in my brain.
I always think of, there's an Albert Brooks movie that I love called Defending Your Life.
Oh, did you write that down? Oh, my goodness.
Defending Your Life.
There's an element of that in Defending Your Life as
Have you seen it?
I haven't.
Oh, you must have a viewing party with your cast. If you have a cast viewing party, I get, like, give me a courtesy invite.
So you can come.
I love that movie.
I love Albert Brooks.
I felt like I was watching kind of like Tom Hanks in hell sometimes. There's a way, it's a little bit of your voice, but then also... the way that you take, that you kind of take, maybe it's because you don't actually know your lines, but so just to be fair, it's super organic, and the way that Hanks acts is, it's almost like things are occurring to him to say, and it feels really authentic.
It's funny.
Doesn't he sound like Hanks right now? These guys are too young.
They've seen Toy Story, Eric. You've used two words here that, as a director, they heard a lot, and that was organic and natural.
Yes.
And it was sort of intentional. And I wanted, with the... You know, you were talking earlier about the movement around the room and the way the blocking works in the cramped room. I didn't necessarily direct them to move anywhere so much as just let them move, and then I'd stop and fix and reel it in. And it's like, okay, that move was great. Because I wanted that. I never wanted it to look like something that the director told them to do.
Absolutely. Yeah. The rehearsal process, like, organic is a perfect word, and it's the word that
we literally had a box taped out on the ground, and it was, it's smaller than our stage. It was much smaller than our stage. And he was just like, all right, this is your space. Do what you can.
I taped a box on the, our rehearsal space was in Lincoln Square Mall, and I taped a 12 foot by 12 foot box on the floor.
Well, just to be clear, you taped a square.
A square.
A box would be
a square.
More three.
Right.
So I actually pictured you bringing in like a TV like box,
putting
it
down,
and making everybody get inside of it, which would be an interesting directorial move.
I had said something earlier, I don't know if it was to them or to one of our producers, if I had directed the show at the station, I would have done it in the round, and I would have put them in a cube. I would have... they would have been in a 12.
I was shocked when we got to this space, and I was like, wow, this is like twice as big as the area we've been in.
It's actually bigger than the space we rehearsed in, and that was kind of
probably twice as big.
Kind of by design.
Well, this is as big as this the Soto Theater has ever felt to me, with the way that this is constructed. And so the last time I was here was to see Kimmy Schofield in On the Exhale, and that felt just as though I always imagined this theater being tiny and intimate, and this feels big. I think it's the combination of the lightness of the walls and then the way that you have them open. But
it has a lot to do with the fanning that kind of happens.
Yeah, this doesn't feel like a platform in a room, and that's sometimes how this feels in here. It's intimate, but that's but to me, there is room for you to move, and you two move a ton, and so it's really. It's cool for me to hear some about the process after seeing that and the words that you were using. And I think about Inez, is that her name?
Yes.
Inez, and the poses that you do. And I showed Aaron a picture of you in the chair.
Oh,
our favorite pose.
Yes.
Antonella and I, during one of our scenes, we observed her doing that. And then at the end of the rehearsal, like both at the same time, we were like, oh my God, when you were hanging in that chair, that was awesome. It was
like, yeah. So she did it, you saw it, and then you made sure that she keeps doing it. That's kind of the way.
That's essentially like how it went.
And it's kind of, it's angular. And a lot of stuff that you do, like you have the height and you constantly are mocking her about her lack of height. Like, don't you call her like little thing and like a lot
little
of
little one.
Like a mix of affection and derision, I guess.
Right.
Mostly affection. Or it's seduction.
That's where the character becomes so calculated. Is it starts out as a seduction, but then she gets rebuffed. And then it becomes
fear.
It becomes something else.
That's
and then
the whole time.
Once she starts, once she starts in on Credo knows that the only way to get back at her is to go after Estelle. And so it's this endless repeating cycle of,
like,
you know,
so many horses on a carousel.
Yeah, like so many horses on a carousel.
We like to quote the show a lot.
Every other sentence.
Bitch!
No, do I have to edit that? I don't know if that's... Is that one of the seven words?
It's a quote. It's a quote.
You're allowed to say it now.
You're not allowed to... It may be that word, but you're not allowed to say something just because it's a quote. I tried that at the dinner table when I was 14. And that's not a good enough excuse. I got the bonk on the head.
It's fine.
All right, note to self, when the FCC comes, it's a quote.
Yeah,
it's a quote.
I was always there.
What do you think? Do you call this show family friendly?
Oh, God, no. Negative.
No?
Nope.
I think it's a mild PG-13.
I don't know. I've always struggled with the American concepts of appropriateness for children.
Because
violence is always like, oh, yeah, cool, throwing, you know.
My children, I have 7-year-old twin boys. They will not be seeing this show. I mean, they're seven. They wouldn't get it. Daddy's kind of scary in this show.
My 14-year-old will be seeing it, I think. And I think theater kids are used to maybe have different thresholds than a lot of other kids. But a lot of it is just, are you going to be interested enough to be disturbed by it?
And my 7-year-old kids would not be.
Mm-hmm.
They would not be interested.
They would absolutely be bored.
Yeah.
Well, Gabrielle, you were going to say something on this topic.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say, there's like a level of complexity there that even as actors you can feel. And I feel like it has to take either a really experienced theater person, not saying that you can't enjoy the show, but there is just a lot to it. So I think that maybe it's not family friendly, but I think that, you know.
There are also things that we like weren't getting until several weeks into it. What do you think they mean by this line? And then we like thought about it. So there were a lot of lines where we were like, I wonder what that means. And then we all discussed
taking the role and stepping into the role, it completely changed my perspective on what the show was about. But it also helped us in some ways discern some things that we had kind of missed before. Things that you know, it's like we didn't, what was that about, you know, as something in the script, what was that all about? We've had many conversations in the last couple of weeks about Credo's cowardice. And
own cowardice thing kind of came up is because we, for many weeks up until this point, we've kind of been more focused on Inez and Estelle and like what they kind of were, what their underlying themes were and what they were thinking about. And now that's kind of reeled back a little bit because these two have a very firm grasp of what the characters are, extremely firm grasp. We're kind of all having the ability to take a look at Credo's character and like what it really means to be a coward in his case.
Well, this is really fantastic just to get to be in a cast that's this kind of introspective, this collaborative. And I could see like when the show ended and the way you all reacted to each other and both celebrated and bemoaned how various things went. but it's a closeness, and that's a really cool experience of being in the theater. I've had sometimes that happens, sometimes it doesn't. But to have this material and be lucky enough to have people that want to engage in it with you at this level is really special and really unique.
My directing style has always kind of been that way. And this was a different experience for me because I had never worked with any of these actors before. And so I had sort of a, you know, you pick two local actors that I used to work with all the time. There becomes sort of a shorthand, and you just wind them up and let them go.
Right.
And I couldn't do that this time. So the process started with trust. I mean, and just they've got to trust me as much as I trust them. And so when the decision came of who was going to take this role, that's when it sort of, that's when the trust sort of gelled there.
Yeah.
Who else would they trust with it?
Well, I can't believe that we've talked so much about the show without talking that much about The Good Place. But I'll just kind of say that to the listeners that No Exit is the show that inspired the creator of The Good Place to create The Good Place. And the whole idea, like, you can see it when you're here. You can feel like that there was an architect mm-hmm. here. And the architect thought about the people, thought about the furniture, thought mm-hmm. about everything. And so I just thought about Michael from The Good Place the whole time and, like, what he was thinking as he was watching.
You're basic,
the,
right.
Exactly. but we should also mention quickly that this show opens Friday.
This coming Friday.
And how many... What time?
Friday and Saturday this weekend. The shows are at 7:30. The show on Sunday is a... Chandra, help me out. 2 o'clock?
2 p.m.
2 p.m. matinee. And then the following week, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, all three shows at 7:30. And then on Friday night, there's a talk back after the show.
So that's the second Friday, a week from this Friday.
A week from this Friday. There's okay. a talk back after the show.
Are there any guests for that, or it's just going to be you and the cast? Wonderful. So that's a must come.
Yeah. So what's basically happened there is there's a French class that's been studying the original script. And when they found out, the guy that teaches the class is a company member here. And he contacted me a while ago and asked about doing this because he wants his students to come. And then there'll be a discussion about differences between the two. And they'll get to ask us questions and, you know, whatnot.
Well, maybe I'll have a bunch of my dad's philosophy buddies come in and grill you on existentialism. Well, the one thing that the New Republic reviewed this show when it first came out in mm-hmm. 1946.
I'm aware of this.
They said the show should be seen whether you like it or not. And so I liked it. Mm-hmm. So, but I more than that say that this is a show that should be seen. And this is a theater that in town doesn't get as much publicity, probably as much marketing.
I didn't even know this theater existed.
That is true a lot. When I have even guests in on the studio that are regular actors in town and theater goers too. So I will do my part and heavily promote this. And I really hope the word gets out because this is a show that should be seen. It's fun to see. It's going to be fun to take away the mm-hmm. subject matter.
There's lots of discussion to be had after you see this show.
And I'm just also, just as an actor, very envious of you all getting to do this together. Because this, I wish you'd have called me 8 days ago. I'd have crammed this stuff in.
I had a list of people that I'm like, yeah.
Just, no, it could not be done. And I how you're doing it just it amazes me, the amount of dialogue that's in there that you have to do.
And as you observe tonight, I don't have all of it yet.
No, there's that line by Credeau. I don't talk very much.
It's in one of the first pages of the script. I don't talk much. Yes, you do, you liar. All you do is talk. Stupid Credeau.
Pig, maybe, but a very special pig to her. Yeah. That's a good
one. You mentioned the... I want to go back for a second because you mentioned the... there's a cadence in the way that I speak in this role that's intentional. And it's something that I had tried to get the other actor to do that he couldn't quite pick up on. And so I've been experimenting with it. So sometimes that cadence is a little different from night to night, but it's intentional. The stretching of certain words and the pauses in certain words, it's intentional.
Well, I noticed it. I was impressed by
it. The dead silence is not.
but nobody knows what this would be like. And so anything you create is real. This is a blank slate. There's nobody can say, oh, that's not what it would be like if I was in hell with 300 people.
Yeah.
She's been to hell?
I've been directing in this area since 1990. And I don't remember ever putting this much blood and sweat in one show.
Well, congratulations. And I really hope people will go out and see No Exit at the Twin City Theater Company, Soto Theater, here on Neal Street, downtown Champaign. Lots of things to do downtown, lots of restaurants, and come see the show. All right. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There it is. See you at the show here on WEFT Champaign. You bet. No exit.
No exit. Coming up. You want to see that, don't you?
You have no choice. There's no exit.
There's right. That's right. When you go in there, oh, it's going to be good. See you at the show. That airs every Thursday right here on WEFT at 5:30. Hey, let's open that door.